Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got John Hoyer back on the show. We get an off-season update from him. We talk river fishing, and we get a status update on season three. It's going to be season three of Tour Level Gold, a very popular YouTube series that John is involved with. I think many of you are familiar with the first two seasons of Tour Level Gold. If you're not, head over to YouTube, type in Tour Level Gold into the search bar, and first thing and foremost, hit the subscribe button, and that's for everybody. And I would just say for any of your favorite YouTube channels, podcasts, or social media accounts, make sure that you take the time to actually follow, actually subscribe. It's just the easiest way to show support for the people that are making the content that you appreciate. So I just wanted to have that little call to action. But anyways, let's get to it here. We've got John Hoyer on the JMO Podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Time is precious this time of year, rigging boats and getting ready for everything. So we'll cut right to it, man. But you know, for starters, what have you been up to in this off season? I'm just kind of curious how your off season goes and what you do to get ready for the upcoming season.
Oh, well, I appreciate you having me on, Taylor. I know you're a busy guy too. So, yeah, this time of year, I actually said it to somebody the other day and I was like, they're talking about like July. And I said, oh man, July, I literally have scheduled down to like the hour. And I was exaggerating, but like, you know, with multiple tournaments, travel, you name it, like those days fill in almost to the hour. But in reality, this is the time of year, especially these last few weeks before our first National Walleye Tour tournament, where I literally am like scheduled down to the hour, it seems, and it's just go, 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 like make it happen no matter what. It happens every year. You know, inevitably you get into a time crunch with, you know, wrapping your truck and boat and rigging electronics and, I got a great support staff and it just enables me to like push it right down to the end because the majority of my off season nowadays is a lot of just conversations with companies and stuff. And you know, I'm always trying to come up with new ideas of how to be able to, you know, help companies out, promote them, provide value to them. So with the addition of Tour Level Gold, you know, we're all kind of constantly trying to evolve that thing and you know, even make it profitable, where really in reality the last couple of years you know, the support we've gotten from sponsors is awesome, but that level of production, you know, rightfully so, it costs a lot of money to produce that quality of a show. And you know, so I'll be honest, a lot of my off season is trying to kind of have new conversations with companies and see if they're interested in partnering with, you know, the Tour Level Gold crew.
I've often wondered, big picture wise, in the off season, is there any sort of an appreciation for some of that like stuff that takes you away?
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know if that's myself maturing as a, you know, full-time angler or whatever, but, you know, during the season, during tournaments and everything, that relief and that relaxation is actually through golf. And it's not because I enjoy golfing. Like, I love the challenge of golf. It's as challenging as, you know, fishing a tournament is for me mentally. But it's the fact that I get to play with like three of my best friends, and, you know, we kind of catch up, we talk fishing the whole time we're golfing. And, so that's what it is during the tournament season. And then, you know, with the induction of archery for myself, that would be like the furthest escape, full escape, not thinking about fishing at all that I've had in my recent life. But as far as like, I guess, yeah, I'm definitely pointed in my behaviors, and that's why I'll like never not go on like a three-week ice fishing outing. And as far as the big picture of like, you know, say forward-facing sonar or whatever, I'm the proponent of forward-facing sonar simply because it's like, yeah, bass guys and the rest of the fishing world, why do you think we've all risked our lives going out early ice fishing? And it's simply because that was the only time of year that we, you know, we literally got to interact in that on that level with a fish, like manipulate it into biting on a flasher, a Vexlar. So we've been loving ice fishing, and I will never not go ice fishing. And the reality of it is like, that's all the practice that got me where I'm at with forward facing nowadays, and the enjoyment will never change. I'll be honest, I target perch like 90% of the time, but the excitement of seeing a school of perch come in and, you know, being able to catch those things efficiently and as quickly as possible and filling your bucket up and having that beel of perch, like, still my number one fishing of all time. And at the same time, I'm like on that very finite scale. I'm still learning. Like this year, I learned two new moves with a glide bait perch fishing that are like game changers. Like, okay, they're not biting, how about this? And it turned into a pattern. So kind of constantly learning, and will always love ice fishing for those reasons.
So that kind of leads into my next question is like, when do you feel like the reps start happening? When we're like on the cusp of walleye tournament season here. Like, at what point in time do you feel like real mental reps start happening? It's almost like maybe they don't stop, you know, because you're just constantly learning. But how would you answer that question?
I mean, all the guys on the bass tours and then also us on the walleye tours, like, we fish more than our competition. So that leads me to the fact that I looked at the calendar, I looked at like when I got my boat, when I could possibly get all the electronics rigged and wraps done and stuff. And there was this date on the calendar. It's April 11th and 12th. And it's on Lake Erie. It's a Masters walleye circuit that coincides with the Lake Erie walleye trail. And I'm like, dang, that's the same time frame as last year. And that was the funnest practice of my life. And what happens on Lake Erie as far as reps is, I mean, there's 100 fish in a 200-foot diameter circle around you at all times, no matter where you are. And, you know, to start the tournament season off like that, you know, the hand-eye coordination, those adjustments, the rod and reel, all that stuff, like, that is an absolute elevated, you know, relearning curve or practice, basically. So I saw that date on the calendar. I knew, like, I didn't want to go into a full-out river reservoir tournament, which, in my mind, preconceived notions, it's not going to be a lot of forward-facing sonar. It's going to be a lot more river fishing. But knowing that, you know, it could be 50-50 post-spawn, reservoir-type stuff, I wasn't super excited to just go there and haven't casted a line for now 7 months. You know, I did some ice fishing, but long story short, I am officially going to go to that Erie tournament. I'm actually borrowing my boat from last year to do it. And all for the same reason you're talking about. Like, I know I'll be in a better place, even though I'm going to be on a time crunch, a sleep strain, a logistics strain. But going to that tournament, getting into that groove, is definitely going to help me in that first National Walleye Tour tournament.
Outside of the NWT, does everything else sort of, on some level, is everything, every other tournament, like a practice for the NWT schedule?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, those are fun tournaments for me, and I am competitive, but not really in fishing. Don't get me wrong. It's great. It feels great to succeed, to win a tournament, a top 10, but I don't personalize my competition. I've never once looked at a guy in second place, or if they're in first after day one, I've never looked at him and said, I want to beat him. And it's funny because if you put me on any type of a court, I'm like embarrassingly competitive, literally embarrassment to my whole family name. The competition is kind of habitual. Actually, it's like, I know my own personal recipe for success. I know that's a value to my sponsors. If I can continue to be relevant and succeed, and then the drive is just natural. It's just, it's habitual. Like, I've always fished sun up to sundown. I know the math on that. You know, the more I can learn and practice or whatever, the more with forward-facing sonar, the better I can be, the more accurate I can be, the faster thinking, the clearer minded, like all those things are going to help me succeed. So that's just like a product of, you know, however many years of success I've had, where it's just like, oh no, that's unwritten. That's just fishing.
You know, talking about the season itself, forecasting for the season, I think that the topic that I kind of want to hear about is tour level gold. I mean, you know, looking at this year's NWT schedule, you know, what are some of the updates or just a status update on tour level gold?
If I was to sum it up, it's kind of like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, the reality of it is, again, I've been talking to additional sponsors. We added a new one this year. I'm really excited about that. You're going to see that on the first episode. There'll be some additional footage compiled afterwards from a first of its kind invitational walleye tournament. So all six of us are going to have two guys in our boat each, and we're going to be, I'm sure that'll probably be as competitive as the National Walleye Tour final day the day before. So that'll be fun to highlight that. A lot of, I'm sure, trash talking and bragging rights or whatever. So I'm hoping to like kind of open some people's eyes and put it out there to the general public. Like, if you have a company that you think that would, you know, benefit from A, brand association, but B, like kind of the entertainment and, you know, marketing and digital media that Tour Level Gold can provide, like, oh man, I would like to get involved in something like that. So other than that, I really feel like, you know, those storylines are kind of already set, and that, you know, as things progress, you know, whether it's Owen in his third year of fishing, I really feel like with all those different tournament venues, like there's going to be underlying storylines, and they're going to show up, and we're going to have fun doing it. You know, it's going to be ups and downs, multiple Great Lakes tournaments, the championship. And ultimately, I just hope to, you know, put Max Wilson in his place.
Yeah.
And not let him or any of his travel partners win Angler of the Year this year. I think it's, you know, Dewey's turn for that again, if I check, or Dusty.
Yeah. Dusty, I just want to see him hoist a trophy over his head, man, so bad. Come on,
Dusty. I agree,
100%. Come on, Dusty. Anyways.
Yes.
Yeah, dude. So we kind of rushed through some of your, you know, some of these personal updates and everything because I wanted to have some time to hash out some real fishing topics. And it is the time of year where we kind of focus on rivers. It's not exclusive to rivers. There's all kinds of fishing going on, or going to be going on here in the weeks to come outside of rivers. But, I'm choosing river fishing topics, and I just want to know what would be some offerings you would have. You know, you can kind of pick the topic, but river fishing walleyes in the spring is going to be how narrowly focused I get you. But I just want to talk river fishing with you and see what kind of seeds we can plant and grow from it. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's a drainage ditch in Devil's Lake or in a boat or standing on the shores of Channel A or the Missouri River below a dam, the Mississippi, like the river fishing for me has always been a really fun challenge. And I guess the first thing that would come to my mind is a lot of the things that I've taken for granted. So one of them is a big shout out to Bill Shimoda. When I was fishing as a co-angler, you know, I would go down to Pool 4 just for fun because I knew it was a good walleye destination in the spring. Well, I was one of, you know, 100 boats below the dam that would just be vertical jigging, you know, in the deeper holes. And Rainy River, same thing. Like, okay, you have to keep your line vertical. Okay, I don't care if it's blowing 30. I am determined enough that I will be the guy on the trolling motor, and I will be staring at my line and keeping it vertical. And guess what? We're catching a percentage more fish than everyone around us just because I'm that adamant about that detail. So, like, that vertical jigging, slipping in the current, you know, that seems like the most basic of things for me. But what Bill taught me when I went and fished with that Pool 4, you know, kind of an industrial feel there, lots of weird stuff going on with stuff on the shore, marker buoys, wing dams, you name it. So he simplified it to me because we fished like 30 spots that day that I never fished. And he simplified it to me basically by, like, if you see that the water's doing something weird, go cast up there. So if you look at any river, anytime, anywhere, if you ever see any disturbance on the water, whether it's a big boulder underneath the water, a little cut for a landing, a current bend, you know, a big bend in the river where some of the water is moving slower, like, those are all spots for walleye, especially in the spring when they're really fat and pre-spawn. Like, they will always use current relief in any shape or form to be able to sit right next to that conveyor belt of food. It's just ingrained in them. To go a step further, the way that they do that, even in chocolate milk type water, is they sense all those current and, like, very minuscule current changes. They sense them on their lateral line. And they're actually all these little, like, micro hairs that make up their lateral line. And that's how they position on those current seams. So it's just predatory instinct, walleye nature, to always use that current relief. So, like, that's a locational tip. Another thing that I've taken for granted in my lifetime, and I remember, you know, I used to pull a Lindy rig around. That was easy. That's what my dad taught me. My second favorite would be to cast a crankbait. Also easy. Just turn the reel handle, touch bottom. But, like, the whole jig pitching thing, you know, a good jig fisherman would stick out like a sore thumb around a lot of average anglers. But one of the key things, especially in a river, is to, like, simplify it down to one thing. And if you were to only make one cast in a river, I guarantee you, like, 99% of the best jig fishermen in a river would name the cast. And that's basically a 45 degree angle downstream. So if you were to go out there and you're trying to learn river fishing and you're spot locked or anchored or on the shore in your waders, the only cast you need to make is a 45 degree angle downstream. So if you start with that, the whole, like, jig weight, scenario and problem, like, what jig size should I be using, it really becomes simple. So you want to go as light as you possibly can with still keeping bottom contact. And if you were to throw into a bunch of, you know, sharp jagged rocks like a wing dam, you shouldn't be getting snagged either. So let's just start with a quarter ounce. If I throw it out there, it hits bottom right away. I have to pick up my rod. I have to reel. And I got snagged. It's too heavy. What about 3/16? Throw it out there. Where's bottom? Okay, there it is. All right, I'm going to pick up my rod tip. It's sliding, and I'm feeling for bottom, and there's bottom again. That's perfect. Guess what? I don't get snagged either. So that's, like, a very basic to me. But I feel like if you talked to me 20, 15 years ago, I'd be like, oh, my gosh, let me get my pencil out and write this down. And once you go out there and just use that simple approach to river fishing, you are literally, like, checking almost every box except is there walleyes here or not. Because, I mean, this time of year in a river, you should be catching them. If you're not, you probably just simply aren't in the right spot. They're not there.
Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zuloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloft Construction at their website, zuloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Talking jig size, you know, we think about other elements of the setup. When we're jig fishing, a lot of times we emphasize line and rod selection, you know, sensitive rods for feeling bites. But in a river situation with current, do you feel like, you know, like where would you stack up some of the other gear categories in terms of importance?
You know, if I was to be at a sports show and somebody is like, oh, I like, you know, I run a lot of Fenwick Elites or HMGs. I'd be like, sweet. Okay. So, you know, what rods do you have? Oh, I have four of them. I love them. Okay, cool. Well, I'm looking to buy a new one. What do you think? If you're going to spend money and buy just one rod, it's your jig rod. So it's, you know, it's 6'9" to 7 feet long. It can be medium extra fast. Everybody makes one. But if you were to save up your money to buy your best new rod, it should simply be the sole purpose is pitching jig. It's the most sensitivity you need in a rod. And a lot of that goes back to how I described that. You know, your jig is floating along. You want that rod to be light enough to know that your last five casts where that jig was just kind of progressing, you might not have felt them thump it. It might have just been all of a sudden like, where's bottom? Why aren't I touching? I'm going to check. Okay, yep, there is one there. So it needs to be your most sensitive setup. And if you were to only spend money, you know, the $400 or $500 on one rod, it should be your jig rod first and foremost. That exact 6'9" to 7 foot medium extra fast. As far as line, you know, if you want to simplify it again, just 10-pound braid, you know, to a fluorocarbon leader maybe. Otherwise, most rivers are usually pretty dirty this time of year, so, like, you can skip the leader. So, like, 10-pound fire line, and, you know, your buddy might love 8-pound mono. He might be using a quarter ounce. But once you learn, it's like, that's fine. He's using a quarter ounce. I only need a 3/16 because my line diameter is narrower. So, again, once you just kind of keep it simple with that 45-degree angle, you're not getting snagged every time. My jig progresses nicely. It slides back behind the boat every cast. That's got to be about the right feel. You can take that line scenario out of it too. Just keep some things standardized like that.
You mentioned something a little bit earlier, which is another topic, a river topic that I wanted to maybe touch on in that. And the reality is like on this podcast, I've, you know, interviewed people and we've had conversations about how to find fish on your electronics in the river, right? It's a lot of side scan, you know, forward sonar. Everybody can talk about seeing fish on forward sonar, but one button I probably don't push enough is like rivers notoriously good. Not all good spots do the fish show up really well on electronics. And so I kind of wanted to get your opinions on that for a few minutes of like, you know, sort of some scenarios that you can think of where, you know, electronics aren't going to necessarily show you everything, or at least show you the fish that you want to catch. Maybe some other big picture talk on like kind of how to break down spots that set up that way, and how to stay efficient. You know, if you are fishing those spots where it's a lot of big rock or stumps or whatever, things that, you know, where fish or they're just pinned to the bottom where they just don't show up really good on electronics. Is that a topic we could spend 5-10 minutes on?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that goes back to, you know, take the advancement of sonar and side scan, crazy valuable. Like I use side scan way more than I use forward facing sonar in any river. Like let's just take the Mississippi. But when you're talking about those spots, those exist and will always exist to the end of time, basically. So the cool thing is there has been so many tournament dollars won where, you know, Jason Shakirat and Katrina's Cut tied up to the tree. I think the most epic walleye footage, I mean, that I've ever seen, I mean, that gave me goosebumps watching it. The way that the FLW highlighted, like, you know, who got there? He's tied up. Boom, he's hooked up. Time is ticking. So when you're fishing for, like, you know, no matter where you are, if you're fishing for walleyes like 26 to 30 inches long, it's not going to be every cast. And when you throw in those variables, there will always be an amount of imagination and faith in your spot that it is good. I caught two here in practice. Okay, can I sit here all day? Because guess what? They're post-spawn and they are moving. Boom, got my limit. I'm in third place. Great. So, yes, a lot of those great spots, you know, you can't necessarily side scan them. There's too many rocks. There's a big tree, too, that's creating that current relief. So you just got to fish them. And, you know, whether I go throughout the river to gain confidence in, like, okay, it is a bonefish in a chartreuse color on a quarter-ounce jig. Like, I've caught them everywhere I've gone. Now when I start going to these big fish spots, I'm going to throw that in there. And with about, you know, 75% certainty, I'm going to be able to tell myself, is there a fish there right now? It should bite this or this crankbait, you know, whatever. So I really love all that type of stuff. But when it comes down to it, yeah, that's like where you start talking about river rats and you get a milk run, maybe in a little area, and you just got to keep going back to those spots because whether a fish is moving up or it's spawned and it's headed down, you know, they're going to stop there. Might only be for an hour. And you just got to keep trying because that's one of your big fish spots. So there's definitely a separation, you know, in rivers in the spring of like, where are all these pre-spawn females going to stage, hang out, eat a little bit once in a while, and then boom, they spawn. And then like most of the time they're just gone. They're gone. They're either going to their summer home or they're going to go, you know, into a backwater to feed, whatever they're going to do. The spawn process is done. Now they're unpredictable. They're moving. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's like one of the purest forms of walleye fishing. You just got to go fish them.
Along those same lines, though, I love it. It's like you got to fish those spots. You know, like you say, it's the purest form of and that's non-tournament anglers. Like anybody that goes out on a river has the intentions of just catching as many big fish as they possibly can. You know, you got to be, you know, looking for these kind of spots and having this thought process. But, you know, being efficient. And you said something there that's very interesting to me, like from a, you know, pre-fishing a tournament standpoint, you know, maybe fishing enough spots and just trying to, you know, catch fish of any size to dial in, you know, maybe a lure pattern and then take that back into some of those real juicy looking spots that, you know, may or may not have you know, produced for you the first time through. I'm sort of curious, like when you are pre-fishing or if you look back on your career, like pre-fishing for those spring river tournaments, is that an intention of yours that you've ever just had to feel like, okay, I got to go where there's maybe a bunch of fish. They're probably small non-tourney grade fish, but I just got to boost my confidence and figure out what these fish want to eat right now. And then take that back? Or are you just the type of guy that just puts his head down looking for big fish the whole time and like some of those other elements sort of fall into place as you go? I'm just sort of curious about that because that sounds like interesting to me.
When we're talking like pre-spawn walleyes, you know, there's a really simple scenario that'll happen on any river, anywhere. And it's the simple fact that like the males are going to show up first. And they're going to be there waiting for those females to come in, and they're going to be the last ones to leave too. So, you know, maybe it does look like a community hole down from the dam on pool four, but somewhere immediately around there, if it's happening, like if it's happening tonight and last night and the last week and it's in spawn, you know, those females are not going to be far along. They're far away at all. I'm talking like feet, like 100 feet maybe. Yeah, there's something to learn right away. And if it is a super community spot, tons of males, you know, smaller fish, whatever, you know, that's a great starting point. And somewhere immediately in that area or downstream, a quarter mile, a half mile, you know, wherever, there's definitely going to be the big ones staging up. So, yeah, I think I always kind of start with a baseline like that. And then, you know, a lot of those pre-spawn females are very moody. You know, they bite after dark like crazy. I remember the first time I ever fished the Missouri River in Bismarck, and my friends Tanner and Cade were, I was driving up to meet them, and we're going to go fish the Missouri River. I can't wait. Bucket list, right? And they're on them. They catch them. But we all know it's like they're moody there. Well, I'm like, yep. And I brought a bunch of Berkeley hit sticks that aren't released yet. And I'll never forget, if Tanner listens to this, he's like, John, we're jig fishermen here in Bismarck. And I said, okay, well, that's fine. I thought you guys wanted to catch like as many big pre-spawn female walleyes as possible. And he's like, well, we do. I'm like, well, that's why I brought crankbaits. So a lot of those females after dark, you know, they just go and feed, and they don't even feed during the day. You know, especially in that clear water. Well, if you ask Tanner, he could tell you the rest of the story. But the first night, sun sets, we lose one. We're just going to pull this current seam into the side channel thing. And then lose one. I'm like, uh-huh. And I'm looking at them on side scan. They're like, they're there, plus rough fish. But we finally catch like a 26-incher, like an hour and a half after dark. And I'm like, okay, we can leave now. Well, the next night, I'm like, I finally figured out the pole, like where I had to be with the boat, pulling our four crankbaits. And then like the next night, you know, we caught, I don't know, 5 or 8 big ones. And I was like, well, yeah, of course. It's universal. They bite after dark and they will bite a shallow, you know, running crankbait or whatever. So it's like a classic case. And I don't know where those fish spawn. Would they be right there? There was males right near there. So I'm sure that those ones probably were going to spawn right there. And I think that's, again, universal spring walleye fishing is. The males can definitely tell you the end point. And somewhere down from there is the progression of the females.
You know, that clear water comment, I think that's going to be a big one this year. Or that's just been on a lot of people's minds like this year. You know, that's not even just a river. You know, they're just like out here in the Dakotas, but big swaths of the Midwest. We don't have a ton of snow. So it's like the creeks and coulees aren't going to run so much. I think we're going to be dealing with pretty clear water, especially if you're looking ahead towards, say, like, you know, anglers in Minnesota looking for the May opener, you know, even places that like rivers or smaller lakes where you're used to that spring dirty water. I think that clear water conversation is going to be a big one again this year. And so I love that. I love that comment. And yeah, anytime that I ever see or talk fishing with Tanner and Cade, I think 9 out of the last 10 fishing conversations I've had with Tanner or Cade or both, that hit stick story comes up, man. Those guys is, I think, it would have been fun to have, you know, just like a GoPro, in the boat there. I bet you they were looking at each other with big eyes when you were just, casually, netting those big fish there, the after dark, man. That was, they love that. They love
that. Well, the conversation started with like, okay, you have a lot of trails running up and down this river. Are you confident? Are you confident about running this in the dark? Oh yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, guess how many people are out after dark, and rightfully so, on that river that time of year.
Yeah. Like, don't be out there after dark.
Okay. Do we have a shovel?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Once I got confidence, it was, their buddy Brett. He's the one who had the trail. We were using his boat or whatever. And it was like, all right, sweet. I'm confident it's driving. So like, you know, we did it 3 days in a row or whatever. And But I can see how, like, I wouldn't suggest everybody to go do that. You need to know your trail well, and you need to be able to navigate in the dark, because it is very dark on the Missouri River.
Yeah, but point well taken, though, you know, just talking about the pattern, you know, and those spring pre-spawn walleyes, and just, you know, being thoughtful about that. You know, Tanner and Cade and their little slew of buddies, especially back then, those guys. And this year, too, I think they're the first guys. Dude, I think Cade and Tanner were the first ones to, I'm probably blowing that out of proportion, but, man, they were some of the first ones to have a boat on the water, and they are tracking that that river channel the day the ice went out here in Bismarck. So if you hit those guys up, I'm sure they'd be ready to rock again for an overnighter.
For sure.
Sticks, man, those guys, man, oh man. But no, that's awesome, man. I love that. I love all the chatter, man. Well, timing is good here. You know, I know you got a busy day, dude, but man, I love the whole conversation. Is there anything else that you would care to touch on? I don't know when I'll talk to you next. I mean, I'll probably be hounding you at some point in time this season, hopefully. But that being said, we're talking spring fishing. We got your NWT season coming up, tour level gold. I mean, I just want to touch on those things. So I feel good about the time. If there's anything else, you can throw it out there. Otherwise, just throwing out your contact, your socials, any content you want to promote or sponsors that you want to plug, anything like that.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. I would say to your wonderful listeners that I assume a lot of you have probably seen Tour Level Gold, and there's some funny detachment about watching Tour Level Gold and subscribing to our YouTube channel, but if you could hit that subscribe button, it'd be awesome, because I don't blame anybody for, you know, corporate America looking at, like, oh, how many subscribers do they have? And our number of subscribers is way lower than our views, which my YouTuber friends are like, oh, you guys are killing it. You're, like, literally flipping the standardized thing of, like, one-third of your subscribers view your videos, unless it's an extra good one. Like, oh, you're flipping the script on that. That's awesome. But I'm like, well, I don't get why these people won't subscribe it if they watch every video. So if you could subscribe, that would mean the world to us, and we appreciate all the support.
That's it, man. I'll let you go.
Thanks, Taylor. Take care.
We'll talk to you.